Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Good morning and welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker here in Atlanta. Once again, another perfect day in the fall here in Atlanta as we enjoy the end of September and early October. Biz Rocket Radio is a show where we get a chance to chat with executives and business owners here in the Atlanta area and learn from some of their challenges, some of the successes that they've had, and hopefully gain some wisdom from what they're doing currently. Today we've got two guests with us, both of them owning businesses, Jackie Sherman and Alan Schaefer. And we're glad to have them both in. We'll get to both of them here in a second. I'm actually going to start with Jackie, who's a PhD. So I'm sitting here, you know, I got a master's degree, but man, you trump me. So yep. I got nothing on you. So I want to first welcome in Jackie. Jackie is the CEO of the Jackie Sherman Group. So welcome in.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Jackie, maybe you could just start off by giving us some background of kind of how you came to be doing what you're doing now.
Okay. I'll start with the PhD that you mentioned. I have a PhD in economics, and I was interested in and living in West Africa, doing what would be called economic development. I was interested in change and how to make the world a better place. It sounds a little trite at times, but that's really what I'm about.
Yeah.
And I discovered that, as interesting as that was, I wanted something that was a little more tangible. And so after finishing my PhD, I transitioned into doing business consulting. So for the past 25 years, I've worked with organizations and leaders in organizations to help them be as effective as possible.
Wow, 25 years of doing the consulting gig, huh?
Yes.
Now, there's so many people out there that are just getting into this because, you know, the way business is today and economics, there's a lot of people in transition.
Right.
And there are more consultants than you can shake a stick at right now. How did you, I guess I don't want to make this sound the wrong way, but how'd you last so long in the consulting gig? It doesn't seem like something that people do for a long period of time.
Actually, it's a great question. I started out as what is sometimes called an internal consultant. So I worked in two larger corporations. I worked for Digital Equipment Corporation, which as a company unfortunately no longer exists. It folded into Compaq and then HP. And then I worked for Amoco Corporation until they merged with BP in 1999. So that gave me about 13 years of experience in large corporations. And when the time came to decide what to do after Amoco and BP, my clients were asking me if I would consult with them, and colleagues were asking me if I would partner with them. And I thought, I don't know if I can do this forever, but I can do it for now.
Yeah.
And that was 12 years ago. So I love it. And the answer to how did I last was, I think a lot of people start consulting and they do what's called undercapitalizing. Mm-hmm. So they don't realize how long it's going to take to build their business. So they don't have enough cash behind them.
Yeah, yep.
And I think it's, you know, if you start with a very small expertise, that may be more difficult to try to market.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a very broad background in organizational change and in leadership coaching. I'm able to move across levels in an organization so that I'm actually very versatile and flexible. And I have kind of trained eyes and trained ears to be able to hear a range of issues and work with a range of issues.
So if you're working with new clients, people that are coming in, what would they look like? Who would somebody come to you? What was it, a large organization, mid-size, individual, you know, business owner? What's the range?
The range would be individual business owners or someone in the senior team of, I would call, a mid-sized corporation. Now, my definition of mid-size is around 25 million to a billion. So mm-hmm. some people, it's a pretty wide range. And then I would also say I have a set of nonprofit clients as well. I've always intentionally had what I call a mixed practice.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I can transition between both and bring learnings from one type of organization into the other. And typically, a leader comes, leaders are in the business of wanting more, right? We want to achieve something, but we always have a view to what more is possible. So usually leaders come with, they see that more is possible. They don't always know how to get it, either for themselves or for their organization. And that more could come in it's a variety of ways in which it shows up.
So it sounds like when you started off, you're kind of shooting a shotgun out with all the information, all the things that you knew, and just kind of hitting whatever you could hit. Have you focused that in at all on a niche or a group that you've really, you know, capitalized on a particular area of your knowledge?
Actually, no.
No, you're not.
No,
doing, you're,
I'm
everyone
not.
Says I you got to focus on that niche, right?
You
that
know,
doesn't work
people
for you.
Say that. I'm a generalist. Yeah. I love being a generalist. I'm very good at being a generalist. And I will say that as a generalist, I have deep knowledge in quite a number of areas. So I've been doing executive coaching for a long time so that I've got a depth at the individual level. I've done work with teams for 25 years, so I have depth in that area. I know a lot about organization design and about how to get teams to work with each other. So I have not actually neither found the need to specialize, nor have I had really the desire to specialize. I think the area of organizational change is a specialty in and of itself. And I, you know, I mentioned being an economist at the beginning, so I understand the economics of business, and I'm able to sort of combine that and bring that to my clients.
Now I know that you have a kind of a saying of leading with the brain in mind, right? What is that about?
So in the last 10 years or so, neuroscience has become, quote, a hot topic, partly because with the advances in brain imaging, we're actually able to see a lot about what's going on in the brain.
Yeah,
and if you couple what we know about neuroscience with leadership, it's actually a very, in some ways, a kind of a unique spot where we now know a lot about how people's brains respond to each other and respond to situations. So leading with the brain in mind is about working with leaders to understand how their brains work, how other brains work, and how to work with it, with people's brains versus against.
Do you use a lot of, I know a lot of organizations are turning to personality testing to figure out, you know, are you, you know, this kind of part, the DISC test and all these other things. Do you do a lot of that, or is that something that you believe in? Or
I do it selectively. Mm-hmm. It's not the place I start, because I actually think that if I start with a conversation directly with you and I understand what you care about, first of all, I know enough about those assessments that I can read some of it myself just
right.
from our conversation. But I also think that you're going to tell me about yourself in a much richer way than what an instrument is going to do. So it's not, I believe in using instruments selectively.
What's the best question you ask to learn about who you're working with and who you're dealing with, the type of person it is?
What do you care about? What do you care about?
Well, that's a good one. Do you get responses that go personal there, or do they normally go into more business answers? And does that matter?
I would say if someone's called me in for a business reason, they will start with the business answer, but I don't ask the question just once. I might ask, what do you care about? And you answer the question, and then I ask, what else do you care about? And eventually, people start talking about themselves. Or if they don't, I might ask, so I'm hearing you talk mostly about your business. What do you care about personally?
Oh, okay. And how important is that understanding of where somebody's coming from a personal perspective on their business that you found in your experience?
Actually, for leaders, I think it's critical. I think we're whole people. I really believe we're whole people, and we bring all of ourselves to a business. So if you think about mind, body, emotion, and some people add spirit, mm-hmm. you know, we are whole, and when we try to separate out a part of ourselves and only bring that part to work, actually, we aren't as effective, and the organization experiences that. Mm-hmm. So it sounds a little woo-woo,
yeah,
but in my experience, it works.
Yeah.
And I think as a coach and as a consultant, I have to be not afraid. I have to be brave and ask those questions. And people will appreciate it, don't they?
Yeah.
They do.
It's crazy. They want to talk.
The more of the whole me that I bring, the more of the whole my client brings.
Yeah. How did you transition? Because 12 years in, really it was corporate America. You were mm-hmm. working as a consultant, but you were within, you were a W-2 employee, right?
I was.
There you go, straight up. How did you transition from that into your own business? Mm-hmm. Well, let me make it more specific. What was the most difficult part about that transition for you?
The faith that I would have business. The faith that, the confidence that in the slower times, that if I kept doing what I needed to do in terms of getting out and speaking with people and talking about what I do, that business would come.
And how long did it take you, just in your own experience, to have that confidence built up where you felt like, you know what, business will come, I've got the ball rolling? Has it happened yet?
Yeah, actually, I would say I transitioned about 2 years ago. But I will say that I had to go through a trough.
Yeah.
And I think also I've had enough ups and downs over the 12 years that I now realize it's a cycle.
Yeah. So what do you do? How do you go out and introduce yourself to people and let people know what you do? What's been an effective way to do that for you?
That's a really great question. I engage with things I care about. So I'm very active in the arts and theater community. So people know me in that context. I do what I would call selective networking. So some people do more a scattershot. They'll go to anything. I really try to go to things where I'm either going to meet colleagues whose work I can complement, or where I'm going to meet leaders who might be interested in something that I do. Another thing that I do is I speak. So I speak at professional associations around town, and increasingly I'm speaking in front of leaders.
What kind of topics are you speaking on? Like, what kind of an organization would say, oh, I've got to have Jackie come and talk to us?
Organizations with senior leaders that realize that leadership is something for them to pay attention to. So I am talking increasingly on leading with the brain and mind. For professional associations, people who are doing work that is like mine, I tend to talk more around process and the way I do things.
Right.
But leaders are less interested in how you do it and more about sort of what results you can produce and what are a couple of things that they could take away and implement right away.
Yeah, so they want the meat and potatoes. They want a little.
That's exactly right.
So when you're working with a leader, because these guys' personalities are sometimes fairly difficult. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying. How do you get, when you know what it is that they need to do,
mm-hmm.
Have they gotten to the point where they say, you know what, Jackie's here for a reason. I respect what she's going to say. I'm going to actually do what she says. How do you get them to follow through with the changes that you're recommending?
So let me say, I don't come in, do a big study, and say, thou shalt do A, B, C, and
right,
D.
Right.
That I don't find that works. Actually, that's why I'm not an economist anymore. So what I do is I meet with people, and I find out what they're interested in accomplishing and what they're already successful at, and I try to work off their successes. So I find that if you try to only focus on deficits, actually what you're going to do, and this is one of those things about the brain, you're just going to deepen the furrows on what it is that people don't do well. So you're better off working off strengths and coupling in a more incremental way. So I actually believe that the way you make change is in small steps. I know that leaders want big change, but I actually think the way you get there is by taking lots of small steps and building one off another.
Do you help people with what those small steps are
Absolutely.
To take?
So Absolutely.
You know what? I feel like this is something that might help you here. You may want to try this.
Right. So I also believe that we have become who we are by practicing what we do. So one of the ways that you change is you develop new practices. Mm. You try something new, and you see what happens, and then you either tweak it or try it again. And over time, you build capacity to do something different. It's actually very brain-based.
Give me an example of one of those small steps that you might have somebody take that's maybe more popular, happens more often.
Okay, so a lot of people don't know how to say no. There's a huge amount of overwhelm in the society today. So one of the things we might do is if I notice that somebody is saying yes to everything and in a state of overwhelm, I might find what we try to do is create what you might call a safe emergency, which is a situation that's safe enough to try something new, but that the trying something new is a stretch. So let me see if we can find a situation where you really ought to say no, but it's not yet comfortable. So can we come up with a way for you to say no that feels a little bit more comfortable, but that you can sit with your discomfort in saying no? And then you discover, for example, somebody might say, I might ask, so you tried it. What did you discover? Oh, I didn't die.
Right, I'm still here. They didn't
I'm
take
still
my head
here.
Off. Right.
Exactly. I still have my job. You know, my clients are still talking to me. Okay, great. So could you find another situation where you can try it? And over time, you get more comfortable at figuring out when do I need to say no? How do I say it in a way that people can receive it and that I maintain a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
And does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you are a business therapist. Do you have a couch in your office?
I do, but
do you
I
do?
Sit on it. I don't lie down on it.
You don't have the clients lie down on it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, as a coach, a lot of coaches have a very negative reaction to the concept of business therapist. I don't, but I also
great.
Really want to say that I think there's a difference. I have maybe a therapeutic heart, if you will.
Yeah.
But I have a fairly strong action orientation, so reflection plus action.
Mm-hmm. So most of the work you're doing is clearly with individuals. Are there large groups that you're working with as well?
Actually, I would say I do more work with organizations, teams, and whole organizations
okay.
than with individual leaders. Although every team and organization with which I work has a leader, and it's the leader who's engaged me. And in fact, for a team to perform differently, the leader also has to do something different. That's actually one of the keys. If you get hired by a leader that says, go fix my team, run, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? The leader is an integral part of the team and needs to, if the team needs to do a different dance, well, the leader has to learn to do a different step with them.
Right. So if somebody came to you, talk a little bit about your process. How would it start?
It starts with a conversation. I listen deeply to what the leader wants. And I have to admit that the question about process is always a difficult one for me because it's a very intuitive process. I have a number of different perspectives that I bring to the conversation that allow me to listen from different lenses. And then based on what I hear from the leader, I can say, okay, I think let's take a look at the interaction between the people on your team, or it sounds like we need to do some work on the business processes that the team uses to work. But I use a holistic process, and I tend to look at vision and strategy, structure, which is about roles and responsibilities. Do you have the capabilities in the individuals on the team that you need? Do you have the processes, the business processes, to make the work function effectively? And what are you measuring and rewarding? Mm-hmm. And those things, whatever exists today, is a perfect fit to get the results that you want, or that you're currently getting. If you want different results, you actually need to change those things.
Right. So what? There's a lot of competition out there, obviously, with business coaches, and a lot. What sets you apart from other coaches? Or
a couple of things. I think my holistic perspective. I think the fact that I bring a breadth of models and frameworks, that I teach my clients those models and frameworks, and that I'm very flexible, so I don't come in, I have one way to do things, and you have to do it this way if you want to hire me. I'm mm-hmm. much more about, let me understand what you care about, what you're trying to accomplish, and then let me, and then I draw from a range of things.
Are you doing a lot of discovery with the individuals in a team, or is it more group settings when you get into the fray?
I actually do both. I usually either meet with or collect some information from people in advance. And then I believe if you ask people questions, you should tell them what they, you know, you should share back with what you heard. So I share that information back. And then from that, they're able to figure out, oh, this is what we want to pay attention to.
You've got to have some crazy stories with all the experience you've had, the travels. Give me an example of either a success story or something that you found that was a little bit unusual. Unusual, I would prefer.
That you would makes prefer? Good radio. I realize that.
It makes good radio.
Oh, I might have to, you might have to come back to me on that.
You have an organization that you've worked with recently that what you did, the process that you took them through, really gave them the vantage point to take action. It doesn't, you obviously have to mention any names.
No, I realize you're not asking. So I've done some work with a company in Chicago, and you know, it's pretty typical for sales and marketing or commercial organizations to be challenged to work with the technical and R&D organizations that they connect with, and the other way around.
Right. Yep.
So getting technical and commercial to collaborate effectively to deliver to the customer is always an interesting challenge. Exactly. They have to learn to two-step differently and to break down their silos. So I've done a lot of work with this one organization on putting together an effective product development process, one that at the same time holds the commercial goals and understands the technical constraints, where the commercial folks feel like they're getting a responsiveness from the technical organization, and the technical organization feels like they are they're not being held to a standard of delivery that doesn't match the process that they're trying to work. So
right.
A lot of it, Alan and I were talking before the show about the importance of people being able to listen to each other, and that's true across between groups in an organization as well. So can I hear what you care about as a group? And can you hear what I care about as a group, or what we care about as a group? And can we come up with, instead of if it's not A or B, it's C.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes into consideration the needs of whether it's two individuals or two parts of an organization in order to deliver effectively.
Perfect. Perfect. So last question we always ask our guests is for a pearl of wisdom that you could share with our audience. What would yours be?
I think mine would be listen more and speak less.
That's a good one.
And listen with your heart and with your body, as well as your brain.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Perfect. Well, that's great stuff. Jackie, I appreciate the time that you've spent with us today. Are you going to have a chance to hang out
Yes, I'm looking forward to listening to Alan.
Alan's got a colorful background. I can't wait to talk to him. It'll be fun. So, Jackie Sherman, we appreciate you being here. If anybody wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Jackie at jackieshermangroup.com.
Straight up email, right?
Yep. I think that's probably the best way.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Jackie. We appreciate it.
All right.
All right. Thank you. Alan Schaefer is our next guest, and Alan is kind of started his life as a Who fan, and then yes. Hotel management, and then you got into the rock business.
I got into the rock business. I was taken to see the Who when I was 13 years old. By my older brother, and I looked around. It was in the Tangerine Bowl in Orlando, Florida, and I was so overwhelmed by the 75,000 screaming people. I was like, I want to do this.
Hey, this could work. I get it.
And then I started what turned to be a tireless pursuit, and it's taken me all over the place.
Yeah. Now, you started off your educational process looking at hotel management, right?
Yes.
Tell me how it transitioned from that to the next thing you did.
Well, I was actually at University of Georgia, and I had a job working at the downtown at the Marriott Marquis, working Champions, the sports bar. Sure. And all of a sudden, I decided I wanted to be in hotel restaurant management. And so I met with the director of HR and said, well, if you're serious about it, there's three places you need to go. He said either Cornell, UNLV, or Florida International University. And being from Florida, in-state tuition, trying to be good to mom and dad.
Yeah.
And so I transferred to Florida International University, and I wanted to be the next Bill Marriott. So I thought, I was working on a fast track down there. And then I got sick. I had this unexplained mystery illness. I had to drop out of school. I spent a month at the Mayo Clinic.
Oh, my God.
And it was a little intense. My parents came to me and said, okay, we're going to sell the house and take you around the world. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm 21 and I'm not ready to think that that's intense.
Yeah.
And they thought I had all these terrible things, Hodgkin's, stomach cancer, all this stuff. And somehow, miraculously, my body healed itself. And to this day, I remember
you
going...
You still don't know what it is?
No, I remember going in the head of internal medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville. And I'm sitting in there with my mother. And he says, well, got good news and bad news. I said, well, what's the good news? He says, the good news is we can rule out all the bad stuff. I said, what's the bad news? He said, well, we have no idea what's wrong with you, what's happened, but you're young, your body healed itself, we're going to call it a miracle of youth. And so So now during that time, I made this arrangement with the universe.
Yeah.
And if I got through it, I was going to do exactly what I wanted to do. So I went back, I quit my job at the Marriott, I grew my hair down to my waist. I started playing guitar 8 hours a day, and at 21, I got in my first real rock band. So I was kind of late to the game.
Yeah, it's usually about 12 that you're having that intensity with
Exactly. And then I finished school. I have a twin brother that was at Georgia Tech, and I said, I want to rock. And I said, what are you going to do? I said, if you want to rock with me, I'm moving to Atlanta. Oh, and if not, I'm moving to Los Angeles. And he said, well, come to Atlanta. And so I moved here, and I had this degree in actually public relations. I changed my major.
Yep.
And I thought, well, I've got a degree. It's going to be easy to get a job.
Sure. Everybody wants me
and,
now. I got the paper.
So I started calling record companies because I needed a place where I didn't have to cut my hair.
Yeah.
As silly as that sounds.
And now you don't have any hair. It's all cut out. Well, you got the new thing going on.
And
right?
So I started going through the Yellow Pages. That's dating myself. And and I got a job working for Warner Elektra Atlantic. It's the distribution arm for Warner Records, Warner Brothers Records and their associated labels, making $6 an hour working in the warehouse.
Nice.
And I was like, wow, I just got this.
With a college degree.
With this college degree. And so after 6 months, I was fortunate enough to make it out. And the one job in on the inside that was really in the record business, I was able to get. And I worked for 13 record label radio reps, whose job it was to get airplay for their artists.
So promo and the whole nine yards. You're running around. Were you traveling much, or were you just?
I wasn't traveling a whole lot. I was, again, an assistant for 13 people all at one time. So they were all traveling, and I was all helping them keep their life in order.
Yeah. Yep.
Both. Now that I look back, both their business life and their personal life in some cases, and then I went to work for Elektra Records, doing more radio promotion. Then my brother, my twin brother, comes to me and he says, "Man, I've been working on this thing at the Georgia Tech Research Institute. It's called the World Wide Web." This was in 1993.
This crazy thing.
I said, "The World Wide what?
It'll never happen."
Yeah, and so he said, "Yeah, and I got this idea for a website called tourdates.com, you know, because I was looking for concert information online and I couldn't find it." And I said, "Well, that sounds like a good idea." Our agreement was, okay, if we can get the name tourdates.com, we'll pursue the business, and if not, we'll just do something else. And he got the name. And so I quit my job at Elektra, took a $30,000 equity line of credit out on my parents' house.
On your parents' house?
No pressure.
Well, they didn't have to sell it sick and travel around the world, so they thought that's a good deal.
Right, this is a bonus.
Yeah.
And so then we had, just like many entrepreneurs, were like, "We have a great idea. We're going to spend a little money on advertising and just wait for all the business to come."
Just like the college education.
Yeah.
It's just, you have the degree and people line up to hire you.
And it was tough. We starved for 6 years. I had eviction notices. I didn't have a car at one point.
Wow.
Luckily, we got taken under the wing of the Kennesaw State University MBA program. And I'll never forget, they came into us and they said, "Look, I know that you guys are making money selling these home pages to bands for $100, but," and they're like, "just here with us, don't flip out. We want you to give it away and just build an audience." And we were like, "But we're starving already. Now you're telling us," I mean, this was a radical, radical change in our business. Yeah. And it was the best thing that ever happened.
Was this pre-Napster?
Oh, this is...
Way pre-Napster.
This is way... Yeah, way pre-Napster. Yeah. So we went out. As a matter of fact, they wrote a business plan for us that finished second at the NASDAQ International Business Plan Competition. And we're literally sitting in the room with the judges. Now, we finished second, and I wanted to know, okay, they're telling us how great the business plan is. And I said, "Well, if it's so great, then how come we finish second?" And I will never forget this gentleman sitting at the end, you know, like this stuffy industrialist pocket watch type, you know, in the vest. He says, it's not your business plan, it's your product." And I went, "Excuse me?" He says, "This internet thing is a fad."
Oh, nice. Do you know his name?
I wish I did.
Oh, you should have gotten the
but
name.
Then we,
I will remember you.
But we sold, but we were fortunate enough to sell our company to a company called Launch Media in 2000. And, It was an exciting time.
Yeah,
you know
what right? What month in 2000? Because I know a little bit about what's going on in 2000.
What seemed more like a home run was probably more like getting hit by a pitch.
Yeah.
Took stock. We used to joke around. My brother, we were doing a radio show after we sold the company somewhere, and he was like, "Yeah, for my next venture, I'm gonna teach people how to turn $12.5 million into a roll of quarters." You know. But we had a good attitude about it. I mean, we did okay, and it really afforded us to do what we wanted to do, which was play music.
Yeah. So the band formed.
We formed a band called Five Star Iris. That's a flower that grows well under adverse conditions. My wife came up with the name.
Nice.
Shout out to the wife.
Nice. What's your wife's name?
Teresa.
Teresa, nice. Good name.
And I figured I needed to get better at the songwriting thing, so I went to Nashville and... You know, I became a singer because I needed one. I became a songwriter because I needed one. Seems to be a pattern here.
Couldn't afford to pay them, so you had to figure it out yourself.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
It helps you grow. Interesting way to develop your comfort zone.
Yes. And the band did pretty well. I mean, we were very fortunate enough to get some good breaks. We toured the world for the troops. Did a 25-day tour in the Middle East. Southwest Asia during the war in 2007, which was humbling and amazing and probably the coolest thing that any of us had ever done.
Wow.
You know, it's something about being in the theater of war and being in choppers flying late at night and with machine gunners.
Jeez.
Yeah, they did let me fly a plane.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not going to say which branch let me fly a plane because I don't want to get anyone in trouble.
No one in trouble, yeah.
Really...
And did that take you... Was the next career... pilot? Is this next on your list?
Or? They did put me in the, you know, they did put me in the left seat. It was pretty cool.
Wow.
I flew over Bahrain.
Nice.
And my brother got to fly over Iraqi airspace.
That's one. That's one of those life experiences you can't replace. Right?
All because you're in a band.
That's right.
It's kind of silly.
You know, you're a rock star. So did you have the long hair, or did you go
short? I was short. My wife was not into the long hair.
Did that get cut right when you met her, or pretty close after that?
Probably not too far
not
after.
Long. Yeah, they pretty much run the show.
She does.
All right, so let's talk about your business. Banding people together.
Yeah, well, Banding People Together is we're a collaboration company, and it's as crazy as this might sound, I think to sound selfish and personal about it, it's the chance for me to right my band wrongs. Jackie and I were speaking earlier, if I knew, famous last words, if I knew like the leadership issues that I was and the team and collaborative issues that I was causing in the band at the time, I feel like we would have gone much, much further. Hmm. You know, things like, when you're in a band, it's like being married to three or four other people and it's a very serious relationship. And you know, while the differences are a great thing, the differences are what can cause each other to, you know, that can turn into a behind the music, you know, and then...
If they only had the film, the cameras rolling.
Oh,
yeah. It would have been a top reality show.
Oh, yeah. And well, for us, what was so interestingly dangerous about our band is that we really didn't have any of the drama. You know, we were just good guys. You know, we were pretty boring in terms of rock and rollers. You know, yeah. We'd be talking about, you know, politics and economics, actually, on the, you know, around dinner and what wine are you liking these days? I mean, it was so un-rock and roll.
Yeah, very un-rock and roll.
You know, we had a bunch of, you know, very smart guys in the band, and maybe that was our problem. But there was a dysfunction underneath the surface.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the most dangerous kind of dysfunction in any kind of team, to where we thought maybe that we were all on the same page, but we really weren't.
So the company that you have now, the group that you have now, tell us a little bit more about what you guys do and how you work.
Well, we started out, Banding People Together, it's a group of rock stars and musicians, a great group of trainers. It's everybody from one of our guys is a guy named J.R. Richards, who was the lead singer of a band called Dishwalla that did quite well in the 90s, to one of our guys, Kevin. He was the played Roger in the touring Broadway version of Rent. And so just a lot of interesting musicians that also have real life experience and business experience. And we're all very, very passionate about helping people discover their creativity and just teaching people how to work together better. And we use the platform of songwriting and the band dynamics is really, that's our platform for teaching people these important teaming lessons.
Okay, so I've got a company and I've got six people that work for me, and we come to you and we say, we're a mess and we need some unity or something. What happens?
We hold hands and we sing Kumbaya.
Awesome.
No, I'm just
kidding. That's the beginning. That's the beginning stages anyway. And then...
yeah. And after everyone reaches for the motion sickness bag, we get to work.
Right.
You know? Most of the stuff, I would very much like to be able to work with groups of six. We've really been working with larger groups, but we just depending on what's going on, we go in and, you know, we assess what's happening. It's funny. Things, while there's all kind of, every team is unique, a lot of the issues are always very similar.
Yeah.
I mean, they're people issues.
Yeah.
You know, Jack and I were talking about it.
Jackie's over here shaking her head.
Yeah, they're people issues. There's ego issues, you know, just like in a band. You know, when a band breaks up or somebody splits and you hear in the news creative differences, you know, that those creative differences are the sum of a lot of things. It's, I don't necessarily agree with the direction or how we're going to achieve our goals.
Right.
You know, because that's we go in and we try and get everybody playing from the same sheet of music, and what that process looks like is different in many cases, but there's a general process and structure to collaboration. Mm-hmm. We teach that collaboration starts with you, that it's a choice, it's a mindset. Like you have to, you know, everybody says they're a team player. That's the funniest thing. You'll never meet anyone that says, no, I'm not a team player.
I'm me.
Yeah.
It's about me.
Yeah, you can't spell team without M-E. I've seen those people too. You know, the other thing is that the differences create the sound. Like if the Beatles were all the same in terms of their musical influences or their philosophies, we wouldn't be talking about the Beatles today.
Right.
And then finally, you got to get everyone playing from the same sheet of music. And what does that look like? You know, we believe that you have to create a set of norms, a way that you're going to treat each other in terms of the creative process and the decision-making process. We teach the idea of consensus. You know, everyone's not always going to love. Everyone can't always be in love with the idea.
Right.
You know, but there is a way to. The last thing you want is somebody on the team or in the band toxically disengaged.
Yeah.
Wow. I got outvoted. This didn't go my way. So now I'm just going to check out. I mean, that kills the vibe.
Right.
So, right. And it's interesting. There are. You know, I also, along the way, I did some consulting for Best Buy and a company called GMR. And, you know, it's the good news is there's, as long as there's people, there's never really going to be a shortage of opportunity for people like Jackie and myself, because what seems, you know, and I don't mean to sound funny, but, you know, there's a lot of what seems very intuitive to me in terms of how to beat with each other as human beings just seems to get thrown out the window very quickly in corporate America.
We don't play well in the sandbox most times. It just tends to go back to the childhood throwing sand and taking the toys and not sharing and the whole nine yards, right?
Yeah, you can actually you see it happening when they say the terrible twos. Terrible two is maybe I have no PhD, I'm no psychologist, anything, but you know I watched some of my friends and their kids and the birth of the terrible twos, and I'll say to them, I'll nudge my buddy and go, "You're witnessing the birth of the ego right there, buddy."
So who would come to you guys for help? What is it that they'd come to you for? A certain situation or something they're trying to get out of it?
Well, you know, interesting, different types of companies. Our business as it is now, we have a few different places where the revenue is really coming from. While we're very passionate, and I love going in and working with smaller teams, because that's a chance to really roll up your sleeves and get it done. You know, a big part of our business is just big group meetings. You know, like
conference type stuff.
Yeah. So we just did something in La Jolla, California for Welk Resorts where they had 130 people.
Yeah.
And so we go in with a team of anywhere from 4 to 6 facilitators. And in that case, you know, everyone says that, you know, you have to have at least some bit of ROI to justify the expense.
Yeah.
But in that case, they just really wanted something cool
to do
and to also hopefully get some takeaway from. And so we went out and we broke up into groups of 30 and we wrote songs, and then we came back together and everyone heard the songs and they came up with individual band names. And
nice.
And it was a phenomenal experience. And then, you know, and then there's some other clients. I'm going to work with another company here in Atlanta where they just want me to come in for a 2-hour collaboration workshop. And maybe we'll write a song, maybe we won't. It'll be just a discussion around collaboration. They're bringing in directors from all over the globe, and they're trying to move towards a much more collaborative culture.
Hmm. So the activities that you're helping direct these companies or organizations with are it's kind of a unique experience, but in the end results, a team building opportunity and kind of a collaboration that brings people closer together and gives them a result of something that they've created.
Yes, I mean there is a team building aspect to it from a messaging and branding perspective. We've kind of gotten away from the word team building. I found that in many cases when someone says team building, they're looking more for an activity. Hey, we're going to come do a game show. We're going to come do beach volleyball, you know, beach Olympics.
Yeah.
And so if I, from a business perspective, if I allow our offering to be put in that same category, they get sticker shock.
So what do you call it?
Just collaborate, like songwriting through collaboration through songwriting.
Okay.
Cool. And we also have a team. We do have a team building thing that we do. But you know, the funny thing about team building, especially in these larger conferences, it's not truly team building because these people aren't working. They're not really teams. I mean, conception, like in a general sense, hey, we're all in the same company, rah rah.
Yeah.
But a team is, you know, they're not working together. They're across different business sectors, and so there's certainly value in getting people together and getting understanding, you know, across, you know, departments and business sectors and all that to foster more collaboration. But you know, they're all going to go their separate ways. So really, a lot of what comes from that is us teaching or sharing ideas so that when they go back to their, these leaders go back to their teams, they can implement some of these things.
Hmm.
So it's interesting.
Very cool. So how long have you been, you guys been on at this?
Well, I came up with the idea a few years ago, and it's so funny. I kind of Forrest Gumped my way through this, kind of like I did with everything else that I've ever done.
Sounds like it's a trend.
I know, it's a pattern. I probably need
next
to lie on...
Next thing you know, you're driving a jet across.
I probably need to lie on a couch and explain this to somebody, but...
Jackie's got a couch.
Yes,
so
Jackie's got a couch.
She can listen.
Is your couch open this afternoon?
She's a PhD. It might be in economics, but I think she can understand what you're going
through. Let me tell you something. I feel smarter just sitting next to her.
I know. She's brilliant.
So
exudes brilliance right over there.
Yes. You're being showered over here.
Really? It's wonderful.
It's, you know, I was very fortunate. And I think, you know, I'm very much a fan of all things relative to entrepreneurship. And I have been very, very lucky to have had a lot of great mentors, a lot of people that took me under their wing when I didn't know what all I know is that I didn't know what I needed to know. So I went out to find people, and someone said to me, "You need an instructional designer." And I said, "What is that?" And next thing I know, I'm doing this search and interviewing instructional designers, and found one that, you know, got the vision, and we went after it, and it's been a great process. And now I've really just become a student of all things collaboration and team theory and that sort of thing.
So what do you envision banding together becoming? What's your vision for the future?
The vision for the future, I think what I'm the most excited about is the idea of going in and not only working with a team or a small group of leaders, but being able to go and really help establish what we call a collaborative culture in an organization. And that's a big job, and changing a culture certainly is a process, and it doesn't happen overnight. And so doing that kind of stuff where maybe, you know, on more of a consulting type basis is where I see it going. And then also being able to do it all over the world.
Taking it global.
Yes.
All right. Well, perfect. Well, Alan, we're about out of time, but appreciate you taking the time to come in and chat with us.
Thanks so much.
So if somebody wants to get in contact with you to chat business, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Alan, A-L-A-N, at bandingpeopletogether.com.
Okay. And actually, I missed one last thing. Your pearl of wisdom, because you know, all over the place. It's better be a good one.
You have to... Life, you know, my father always said, life pushes and shoves. And the difference between swimming upstream and downstream is detaching yourself from any outcome. You just got to go with the flow. I never thought I'd be, you know, I've done a lot of radio shows. I've never done a radio show like this. It's always been, you know, traditional, you know, for music. So the fact to be sitting here with all you guys, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So don't fight the flow.
Good stuff. I like it. Don't fight the flow. And listen more than you speak. Words to live by. Thank you, guys, and I appreciate your time, both of you, for coming in. And to our listeners, we appreciate you guys signing in. And until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.